This is Mae Brussel. This is the second half of broadcast number 766. Continuing on that article, which is titled in the San Francisco Chronicle, Double Defector Levels New Charges at CIA. They said that the federal executive director, which lists CIA personnel, doesn't have a showing of any one named Fountain, but the agency has a policy of refusing to comment. And, of course, when he walks up and he says, I'm Mr. Fountain, he could be Howard Hunter, anybody else. Mr. Yurchenko knew the top people in the CIA, but anyone who comes to him who gives a certain name, I'm sure he's not going to look it up or question the name. Yurchenko said that CIA Director William Casey, who is a Knight of Malta and part of this Vatican entourage, told him that it was necessary to convince the world that all anti-American activities in Latin America are directed by Moscow. Now, Ronald Reagan gave Henry Kissinger put him in charge of all the Central American policy. And in order to wipe out those countries and make them safe for dictatorships such as Mr. Pinochet and his kind, or Mr. Zia of Pakistan, which Kissinger nicely put them into power, or because of the murder of John Kennedy, we have Ronald Reagan in power, the two Kennedy brothers. They wanted the Central American policy to appear all Russian so we can send in our troops. Yurchenko said the CIA was preparing him to testify in Rome that the Secret Service police, the KGB, worked with the Bulgarians in the plot to kill the Pope. Yurchenko was to play the part of someone named Malenkov. Now, if he's to be Malenkov, Mr. Tom Fountain could have been somebody else. He was supposedly to have met with Sergei Antonov, the Bulgarian airline official who was accused of conspiring with Mehmet Ali Agha. Malenkov would testify that he gave Agha 3 million West German marks for the job. In presenting me as a ranking KGB officer, the Americans hoped to give special weight to my testimony and to exert a decisive influence over the course in the Rome trial. Isn't this totally disgusting? Yurchenko, who said that he was an embassy security officer, disappeared from the Soviet embassy in Rome in August of 85. He lived in Rome. He disappeared in August 85. When he appeared in the Soviet embassy in Washington in November, he said he was kidnapped and coerced by the CIA. At a subsequent press conference in Moscow, he said he escaped from his keepers by walking from a Georgetown restaurant. Last March, he was seen again in the Soviet Union. And Saturday's interview, they called the CIA's Kitchen of Falsehoods, is the first official public word from him since the November press conference. He called it the CIA's Kitchen, based, I suppose, on the kitchen cabinet that put Ronald Reagan in. And as I say, the press are very good at covering this. George Seldes wrote a book on the American press. He's a great researcher. He's about 94 now. He's written a long series of books and used to publish, in fact, and in his book, 1,000 Americans, Enemies of America, he described the press in 1947 after the war. He said the first fact is that while documentation is available, it has not been presented to the public because the press and other avenues of communication are in the hands of 1,000 Americans. That was 1947. There are fewer of them now. The facts speak for themselves, all right. Now, he is talking about the fact that information on Pazienza and these cover-ups was available for people to see if you wanted to see it. I've done a lot of broadcasts on it, and David Emery in Los Altos and KFJC has done a tremendous amount of work on this terrible scandal and tried to expose it. He did a 5-part series, 3 hours each, called The Mediterranean Merry-Go-Round, and where he describes the Pazienza links to the Vatican and to the White House and to Los Angeles and South America and the death squads and so forth. A tremendous job of research, and I'll give you the address of where you can order these tapes. It's very important. But the information is out there if you want to read it, just like last week I cited the fact that Mein Kampf was available and nobody would read it. It was there for you to see. The Pazienza story is out. And George Seldes said that the facts speak for themselves. They're frequently seen in the Congressional Record, in 3 or 4 liberal weeklies, and through the pages of books which have a sale of 2,000 copies. Particularly in these times is one of those American weeklies or semi-weeklies that had lot of articles on the story of Aja and the covering up of the relationship to American intelligence. They carried that through the whole trial and through this whole scandal. Seldy said as late as a decade ago, he's talking about 1937, the Scripps Howard newspapers were a powerful chain in America, and they served the public well instead of corporate interests. Then the Federal Trade Commission published their findings, and these newspapers did likewise. The findings were simple. They said that the light and power industry used a fund of between $25 million and $30 million in 1937 to 1947 to bribe and corrupt and fund editors and owners and publishers of newspapers around the country. And all of this is indexed and available so that the news you get is quieted by millions of dollars. And imagine 20 or 30 million in those days, what it would be now to stop stories from coming out. Now, this past week, the Pope was down just a week ago down in Colombia, and there was a story, of course, you all read in the newspaper, Pope urges the Colombian poor to reject violence. Well, I suppose there's nothing that I hate worse than hypocrisy. And if you want to order those tapes of David Emery and Nip Tuck, I'll give you the address. It's DAVKORE, D-A-V-K-O-R-E, Company, 1300-D, Space Park Way, Mountain View, California, 94043. Write and ask for their series on Who Shot the Pope. They did a long section on that. These are 90-minute tapes on fascism in the Vatican, the P2 Lodge and the Vatican banking scandals, the P2 Lodge some more, the Stiebaum, which is the link of the narcotics, and connections to Hollywood and Reagan and Frank Sinatra and the international drugs. And that also goes down to São Paulo, Brazil, through Tomasa Buceta and the Western intelligence connections. These are a marvelous series. There's 15 hours on what they call the Mediterranean merry-go-round. And for the Pope to tell the poor in Colombia to give up violence, when everything in these hours is documented, the 15 hours of continuous linkage of the Vatican, the Pope, it's about the Vatican, not all Catholics, but the Vatican, their links to Adolf Hitler, their links to Mr. Franco in Spain, to Mussolini, to the rat line that let the top Nazis leave Europe after World War II, to dope and international narcotics, to death squads that are in Central America and South America, and links to the World Anti-Communist League, to gun running, and every kind of crime that has been brought upon mankind, starting with tremendous amount of funding from Italy, first the Vatican, and then with Paul Marcinkus and Michele Sindoni and Licio Gelli, Francesco Pazienza, and that Roberta Calvi, and this network going to America. And as I say, Gelli was at Reagan's inauguration. Sindone allegedly gave Richard Nixon $1 million. The denial that he didn't take it, it doesn't even stand, because the first thing that happened when the Watergate defendants were arrested was to get a shredding machine and destroy all the books and finances at the committee to reelect the president. So how can you say they didn't exist, the facts didn't exist about Sindona and the Vatican funding Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew, particularly Agnew? Now, again, the Pope was attacking Nicaragua for expelling a bishop, and the government says down there that they're involved in intelligence, and the Vatican has been screaming about closing La Prensa, the newspaper in Nicaragua, that there's no freedom of the press. And the Sandinistas say that La Prensa could be used and was used by the Central Intelligence Agency, that the CIA funded a newspaper such as El Mercurio in Chile that was behind the overthrow of Allende, and that newspapers can be CIA fronts, and the Pope is screaming about the bishop leaving and the press closing when they are conduits of also the Knights of Malta, the policies made by Haig and William Buckley and Mr. Frank Shakespeare and Vernon Walters, and a series of government officials who are representing the Vatican and the Vatican funding the Contras. So the idea that the Pope tells the people in Colombia avoid violence, the poor, is just absolutely horrendous. Now, I haven't heard anything about the Vatican screaming or Washington screaming about the death of newspaper people in Mexico. The La Prensa is closed. Nobody was murdered. There's an article in the LA Times this past week, July 31st. Grim stories for Mexico journalists, 27 slain in 15 years and no convictions. Now, if you read up and added up the American journalists that have been killed in the last 10 years or 15 years, I think we'd find just as many, such as Dorothy Kilgallen, Jessica Savage, and I could go on and on of newspaper people and list them. I have lists of them who've been murdered for certain articles they wrote, such as Jessica Savage doing a movie and documentary on the murder of Roberta Calvi in London. In Mexico last week, just two liberal writers were murdered in a town called Matamoros. They were blown up. Ernesto Flores Torrijos, publisher of El Popular, and Norma Moreno Figuera, also gunned down, 24 years of age, gunned down in Mexico. Journalists exposing some of the links of corruption in Mexico that also touch the United States. So the idea that you close an office of a newspaper isn't an act of violence. It's a matter of self-defense, of surviving. But when the newspaper people are diligent in their work, they're gunned down like dogs at a hunting feast, and then the wall of silence takes over. The London Observer, May the 4th, had an article, Nearing the End of the Calvi Trail. And this is looking for money of Roberta Calvi, who was the head of the Banco Ambrosiano in Italy, in Milan. Calvi went to England. That's where he was hung. And several people from Ireland and Britain have been following the money and the creditors of the banks where the money, disappearing money, went. And this money was tied to the Vatican, and they made a settlement for $250 million of the missing money. And this article from the London Observer has to do with Michele Sindona, the Machiavellian Sicilian lawyer, recently murdered, and the Institute per l'Opera di Religione, it's IOR, it's for religion, the money for the religion, the Vatican's bank, and Licio Gelli, who's now in Uruguay, living down there in Uruguay. And as I mentioned last week, Ecuador is filled with the Sikhs and the far-right-wing assassins that are flooding into Ecuador, and Sao Paulo, Brazil, continues with its strong fascist connections. The Observer cites the P2 Masonic Lodge that was headed by Umberto Ortolani, now a fugitive from Italy, who's living in Sao Paulo, Brazil. That's the nest of Mr. Romeo Tumo, the police chief who said that Joseph Mengele was in that coffin. He wasn't there, and there are many reasons to not believe that was Mengele, but the nest of these people from the Vatican and the entourage are very safe under Romeo Tumo in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And the searching for the money has gone to various places in Bahama, Nicaragua, Peru. And the money is being put together to find out how so many millions were gone. $1.2 billion was missing, and that's a lot of hundred millions. And now they're nearing the end of trying the Calvi Trail. One of the people that worked with Roberta Calvi, of course, and Licio Gelli, who's still alive, who's still in Peru, causing all the violence that is bombing the airplanes, bombing the trains, rather, and creating the excuse for a police state. They almost had a coup last week. The man who's arranging all that is Stefano Della Calle, who worked with Klaus Barbie in Bolivia until Barbie was arrested, then went on to Peru, and he acted as the regulator for the P2 and the Masonic Lodge with links to the Vatican and American, Latin American dictatorships. And Della Calle has been in the United States and not been arrested. He dips in and out of the United States, and I'll do a little more on him before the program is over. But he has those links, and he is allowed by our customs and people in the United States to travel here and out. And he's been charged with a part in the Bologna bombing, of which Francesco Pazienza can't be charged. The Americans say you can't blame him for that. And Della Calle is out loose in Peru, causing literally the overthrow of that government to make it safe for particular fascism or drug dealers. There was a story in the Houston Post, July 13th. The mood in Europe, Monaco's concern over international terrorism focuses on shortage of American tourists. Now, that is the most hypocritical, again, the most BS stuff is coming out in the newspapers. I'm sure the American tourists don't go there. I'm sure the American tourists are afraid of terrorism. But it was the P2 Lodge the Masonic Lodge, a member of that lodge was Henry Kissinger. Roy Cohn was involved with that lodge. This was the Licio Gelli Lodge. This was the Monte Carlo Lodge that decided on the Bologna bombing, the orders of Bologna bombing, that worked with Klaus Barbie in Bolivia and with the military dictatorships and drug dealers around the world. Can't these people who cry about the lack of traffic make any connections to the reason people don't go there? It's written by Lynn Ashby, and if you were a little more careful to read the newspapers about the Monte Carlo origins of the strategy of terror to get people afraid and to bring in fascism, one of the home bases was in Monte Carlo, and the effect of this strategy of tension, that's what it's called, Otto Skorzeny set it up. Hitler's most dangerous man went to work for, he was kept under the nose of Henry Kissinger after the war. He went to work for the CIA. He worked for a Fritz Kramer in Germany, right under the orders of Fritz Kramer. That's why I want to know if it's the same one. He devised, along with Stefano Della Chiaia, the strategy of tension, of bombing, of disarming people, not necessarily politically active, of scaring them. And Otto Skorzeny worked with the CIA, and I wrote about him in my Rebel article on the Nazi connections to the Kennedy murder. And Skorzeny and Stefano were instrumental in the opinions such as at the Monte Carlo Lodge. So if they want to get their tourists back, they better get their head together about the origins of tension and what is happening today, the same problems that have continued ever since these people got their heads together after World War II to keep people off guard by bombing and killing and dope dealing and doing all kinds of crimes that could always have been figured out and they could always have been arrested, except that our intelligence community and our defense community went along with various countries in promoting this as a means of asking for more police for the eventual police state. And there's a story this morning in the paper I'm sure you enjoyed seeing. Helms Aid, this is Jesse Helms, Helms Aid reportedly gave information for a fee. This is August the 11th, 1986, San Francisco Chronicle. A chief aide to Senator Jesse Helms, the Republican from North Carolina, maintained a business near the senator's Washington office. He sold information on taxes, on foreign affairs, and other subjects to North Carolina corporate executives. Now, beyond that, where did they go? And they describe the two businessmen told the Charlotte Observer they paid $20,000 a year, these corporate people, to the aide of Jesse Helms, who had a business on the side. Now, the aide's name is James Lucier. If you add an F between it, it would be James Lucifer. We can call him James Lucifer, the senator's chief investigative aide. Senate rules do not prohibit staff members from operating businesses outside where they sell information on what the senator knows. He ran the business from 1972, when Jesse Helms was elected, until 1981. From then on, once Reagan was in, they could get all their information free, and Jesse Helms is on the Foreign Relations Committee, so they don't have to pay. They were paid $20,000 a year by these particular corporate executives, and then they, of course, have no promise to keep it under their heads. Excuses for business purposes, but how do we know it was all business? The article says neither Helms nor Lucifer could be reached for comment. Former Senator Robert Morgan, Democrat of North Carolina, who was a member of the Senate Ethics Committee, said selling information gained through your position as a government official would be improper. Morgan was defeated by the 1980 election by John East, who just allegedly committed suicide several weeks ago and is now blaming Bethesda Hospital for his death, tantamount to a murder, and I'll update that for you later. And they cited two people who were customers. And from 1972, when he was elected, to 1981, and these are the years of Spiro Agnew and Richard Nixon and Mr. Rehnquist as advisor to the Justice Department and Robert Mardian at the time. These activities came when Jesse Helms was sent to Congress in Washington. Then his top aide opens up his own advisory service, his own private business where he sells information. It was called Capital Information Services, which is what it was. It came right out of the Capitol. It came right out of Jesse Helms, a long friend of Roberta Daubuisson, and the police state mechanics. This information then went out to clients. His chief aide sold it. There was a long article. There's been many, many articles in Executive Intelligence Review, which many of you freak out if I mention it. I'll just cite one that was published June 27th. Mexico hits Helms outrage, fires Wall Street darling. Senator Jesse Helms has called for a stop to all economic aid to Mexico until the Mexican government agrees to turn over power to the Nazi Party. In public hearings on June 17th, sponsored by a subcommittee on Western Hemisphere Affairs, Helms said that Mexico deserves no help from the international community until its electoral process is opened up. He presented what he called secret statistics on the 1982 presidential election that showed the Nazi opposition gaining over 55% of the national vote. That's the PAN party. He questioned the legitimacy of the Mexican president, and at his hearings he had a series of attacks against Mexico. In this article, it goes on to describe black propaganda and says one must ask Helms or his staff, who apparently got the documents, how does he explain that the president of Mexico, Mr. De La Madrid, for 3 years has been president and not one single person in or out of Mexico challenges legitimacy, not even the PAN party, which is the fascist party, nor the communist party, the PSUM, went so far as Jesse Helms. Jesse Helms is lying and creating problems for Mexico. Now, another article, which is quite lengthy and in great detail, I'm going to share with you, usually excerpt a lot of articles and read the highlights, but this is very important, and it's June 27th, 1986. Politics makes strange bedfellows. Politicians and some members of the intelligence community in Washington are trying to figure out how highly classified material from April 21st and May 8th, the closed-door hearings on Panama, held by Senator Jesse Helms, ended up in the New York Times piece by Seymour Hersh. Helms purports to be so hard right, he was last witnessed trying to democratize Panama by putting a hardcore Nazi, Arnulfo Arias, in power. The documents show that from the United States archives that Arias met with SS, that's the Gestapo SS, head Heinrich Himmler. They opened meetings with a Nazi salute at Heil Hitler. He was under investigation for drug running, and he sought to drive the United States military from Panama. This is the man that Jesse Helms wants as the president of Panama. Helms appeared to back off on Panama until Seymour Hersh of the New York Times published an article to torpedo Arias' opponent, General Noriega, the head of Panama Defense Forces. Hersh is a perfect shill for the Jesse Helms plan to, in quotes, democratize Panama by installing the lackey of Adolf Hitler. After serving as press secretary to Senator Eugene McCarthy, 1968 presidential campaign, Seymour Hersh joined members of the Institute for Policy Studies in founding a fund for investigative journalism. Now, Gene McCarthy is described in the book Who's Who in the CIA with a CIA background, and I understand Seymour Hersh is coming out with a book on the Korean airline, which absolutely whitewashes the American involvement in the complicated conspiracy in the Larry McDonald sector I've talked to him personally about, which he completely threw out. And Seymour Hersh was adamant in saying the CIA had no role in killing Salvador Allende in Chile, and later it turned out they had a very good role, and he knew it all along, and the evidence was available all along. The article goes on that Seymour Hersh did a study of chemical and biological weapons, which I'm anxious to get a hold of, which cited confessions of tortured POW in Korea to claim General Douglas MacArthur employed biological weapons in the Korean War. And this article goes on to say that because of the article on chemical and biological weapons, he forced Richard Nixon to put a ban on them in 1971. And the ban in 71 is when he turned the laboratories over to Litton Industry, which is military, and they could continue the biological weapons under different names and different organizations. The article continues, the journalists, associates of Hersh, report he made a deal with Director of CIA William Colby, this is during the Watergate years, in CIA Director Colby, who leaked Hirsch the CIA family jewels gathered by Colby when he's deputy to Daniel Ellsberg's protege, Director of CIA James Schlesinger. Hirsch claims himself claims Colby fired the head of the CIA counterintelligence after Colby met with Seymour Hirsch to preempt a damaging New York Times article. Intelligence sources wonder whether Colby's associates recently helped Hirsch, Seymour Hirsch do a hatchet job on Panama's Noriega. It bears the same paw prints as the innuendo and slander that has continued against Noriega to put the Nazi, the Arias, Anulfo Arias, into power. Seymour Hirsch not only claims Noriega worked as a double agent for U.S. intelligence against Cuba, but that U.S. could read what Noriega reported to the Cubans, a leak that, if it was true, could put the general's life in danger. Almost the same charges against Noriega appeared later in a Washington newspaper. This is the Washington Times, a Reverend Moon paper, by Georgianne Geyer. She claimed that these papers had been discussed with Senator Jesse Helms at closed-door hearings, that Jesse Helms had these papers, and evidently Seymour Hirsch received them to blast Noriega and link him to drugs to Cuba and so forth, and Panama to Nicaragua and the drug dealing. The sources report that the article was actually written by Jesse Helms' aide, Deborah DeMoss, the superior in Helms' office, and by Jim Lucier, that's Jim Lucifer, the same man who had the public relations firm that was selling from 1971 to 1982 information that Jesse Helms had to privately get out of the congressional offices. And the person working on the Noriega story and the drug dealing to put a member of the SS, but sympathetic to the SS and Himmler and Hitler, into power in Panama. The article says a member of Geyer's staff disclosed she had talked with DeMoss about the hearings that were taking place. Is DeMoss one of the leaks of the Seymour Hirsch story of the highly classified material? It wouldn't be the first time that DeMoss, the aide of Jesse Helms, who works with Mr. Jim Lucifer, could let security out the window. And this continues. Look in the bed. One adage when investigating leaks is don't look under the bed, look in it. A government official, a leading journalist, and a noted author all claim that Deborah DeMoss had a torrid affair with Colonel Roberto Dobison, the El Salvador right-winger who tried unsuccessfully for the presidency. Helms' staff picked up Dobison at a 1980 meeting of the World Anti-Communist League, also attended by Bologna, the train station bomber and hired assassin of the Bolivian cocaine colonels, Stefano Della Calle. Now, that's the guy who's in Peru, who headed the death squads, who's part of the B2, P2, the Vatican connections. Stefano Della Calle at a meeting of the World Anti-Communist League with Jesse Helms and the sweetheart of Dobison, the lover of Dobison, Deborah DeMoss, is the top aide with Jesse Helms, along with Jim Lucifer, the man who was selling, and he may be giving him away now and stopped in 1981 selling them, and they were with Stefano Della Calle. DeMoss was assigned to chaperone Dobison around Washington when he came and visited him frequently in San Salvador. Senator Helms was on such intimate terms with Dobison that his staff allegedly planned a fabricated story about the CIA funding Dobison's moderate opponent in El Salvador elections to make it appear that the man he was running against worked with American intelligence. This phony story triggered a plot which may have been linked to Dobison to murder U.S. Ambassador to El Salvador Thomas Pickering. And in comes Vernon Walters, a Knight of Malta, who allegedly was the one to stop the plot when the plot story was created by Dobison to link its opponent to the Central Intelligence Agency. Deborah Moss would not return calls, this article says, involving the pattern of leaks from the Helms' strange bedfellows with Seymour Hirsch. And at the time that story broke, I said it was a big diversionary of Noriega to link him to Fidel Castro in Nicaragua, that I'm sure none of them are angels, and there's lots of drugs in Panama, and there's a lot of dummy fronts of the Vatican in Panama, and Jim Jones had lots of millions in Panama. They're not clean. But the gist of this article is that Miss DeMoss was leaking to her alleged lover intelligence on a plot to kill United States ambassador, and she said, "I did it on orders from President Reagan," relayed by Senator Helms. The White House has not returned calls, but she blamed President Reagan for these shenanigans. So we get a cycle of these people surfacing now in the news, bits and pieces of their interconnections and the interplay. And the bottom line, of course, of all of this is drugs and weapons and assassination teams. My time is up now, and I'll continue. I want to get back to the Sikhs and their role in Ecuador, what they're doing there. I left off last week. I didn't update it. I'll do more next week, along with a lot of more of the scandalous news. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel. Thank you for your letters, articles, books that I've been getting. And as I said last week, I will start writing and answering my mail very soon.